Right now, though, it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur is kind enough to join us on Monday mornings, and we travel through the wonderland of food. Good morning, Arthur.
The wonderland?
Well, sure, there's nothing more.
I think it's more like a minefield.
Maybe for you and I, but for
you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So, I don't know. There's so much on my mind, and then there's nothing on my mind, and there's almost nothing on my stove. I've been cooking a lot because I'm on a diet and because we have a virus out there that prevents us from eating other people's food, although you can order in. So I'm down 34 pounds, Marshall.
There you go.
I mean, it's for some reason, the weight loss has speeded up a little bit since New Year's. And instead of losing about a pound and a half a week, I'm sort of doing like 2 pounds a week. And I realized that everything I read about the diet I'm on, called the keto diet, which is basically as low-carb as you can go diet, is that you're supposed to eat most of your calories from fat. Well, it's scary. It's scary to get 70% of your calories from fat and then almost all the rest from protein and very few carbohydrates. But I can't live without vegetables, so I do eat what I now refer to as above-ground vegetables because those are the ones that have the least amount of carbs, and I do eat some fruit. I can't live without fruit. I just this week decided that since the melons are now terrible, there was a little period there where I was getting these great cantaloupes from Guatemala. That's over. Watermelon, which is like one of the best fruits for a keto diet, is also horrible. Those strawberries, I don't know, I'm curious. Since I have never eaten, I'm not exaggerating, I've never eaten out-of-season strawberries, and I always used to make vicious jokes about people who ate strawberries for Valentine's Day. Like, what are you doing eating strawberries in the middle of February? So now I know why, because they're horrible. So I gave up on, and the strawberries are really expensive now, as well as being bad. And there was, again, a little period there where I was getting some good strawberries from Mexico. I told you, I'm not a locavore, I'm a globavore. I will eat anything that is in season around the world. It doesn't have to be in season in Brooklyn, or even, for that matter, in Sharon, Connecticut, where you have no seasons, and, you know, you're not going to get anything local until July. In any case, where was I? Locavore, globavore. Anyway, I've been eating this way, but lately, it's true, I have been eating more fat, only because all the articles I read about this diet urge me to. And, I like chicken, but chicken is not all that fatty, although I've discovered that chicken wings seem to have the right proportion of fat and protein, because when I eat chicken wings, I feel like I'm on a diet. I'm on the diet, and there are other foods like that, but some are lean. So, for instance, let's do a little basic cooking lesson here. Spatchcocking chicken. That means nothing more than butterflying. In fact, I meant to look up the word spatchcock to see where it comes from, but cock probably comes from the French word for chicken, which is cock, not the other meaning of the word. So it's butterfly chicken, and I have a Joyce Chen scissors. I have to say, I thought everybody knew how to do this by now, since the chefs do it on television, and there are articles about it. It's in the newspaper as like the quick and easy way to roast a chicken, butterflied. So, but my physical therapist, who is now my good friend, and he cooks every day because he has a family to cook for. At least a wife and child. Anyway, he's also a keto-friendly person. His big splurge is having a hero sandwich. That was what he was fantasizing last week. I may actually go out and get one today. I think my body can tolerate a little carb today. In any case, he didn't know how to spatchcock a chicken. And it's such an easy thing. I showed him I have this scissors, called the Joyce Chen Scissors. Joyce Chen was a Chinese restaurateur in Boston, or in a Boston suburb, and her daughter has continued to market these scissors with her mother's name on it, and I'm sure they're available on Amazon. It cuts through bone, well, chicken bone anyway. So you take your scissors and you cut out the backbone of the chicken. Do not throw it away. This I call the chef's share. To me, that's like the best piece of chicken on the chicken. So I salt and pepper it, and I put it on the roasting pan along with the actual chicken. So, and then when the chicken is out of the oven, I get to eat the back before anybody looks. And it's like stealing a meatball from your mother's pan. So, except that it's my own pan. Anyway, so I salt, the most basic thing is salt and pepper it. And I these days I actually lift up the skin on the breast and the thighs. I stick my fingers inside there to separate the skin from the flesh, and I salt and pepper inside there too. I mean, it's not such an easy thing to do, but if you stand the chicken up and just pinch in the salt, you're fine, and then you can rub it into the meat a little bit. And then salt and pepper the outside too. I like eating the skin. I love eating the skin. And by the way, the skin has a good amount of fat, which is why some people who are fat phobic don't eat the skin. And I treasure the skin. And I salt and pepper the skin. And I salt and pepper the chicken on both sides, also on the non-skin side. But I roast it skin side up on a rack on a sheet pan. I used to do it directly on the sheet pan, and that's fine. It really is absolutely fine. But if you're doing just a plain chicken with nothing underneath it to season it, for instance, on a sheet pan, I might, if I have a lemon that needs to be used up because the rind has gotten a little dried out by sitting on my countertop, I'll slice it up thin and I'll put it underneath the chicken. It will, in fact, flavor the chicken. So put it on the rack, or not on the rack, in a 450-degree oven. For a 3.5-pound chicken takes 45 minutes. And at which time, I forgot an important thing. I brush the skin with olive oil. You can brush the skin with butter, too, but I prefer olive oil. And butter will brown more than olive oil, just to say. So I brush it with the fat and roast it for 45 minutes at 450 degrees. You now have a perfectly roasted chicken. No fuss, no turning, no basting, no nothing. Now, that's the most basic. You can season that chicken any way you like. I mean, one way I used to do, and I was thinking about it this morning, I think I'm going to do it again next week when I need another chicken, is I would put whole leaves of sage under the skin in as many places as I could manage to get sage, and then marinate the chicken for at least a few hours in lemon juice, and if you like, with some crushed hot pepper, and then roast it. So we can't eat a whole 3.5-pound chicken. And as I mentioned a few weeks ago, it is really hard to get a chicken that is less than 3 pounds. Although I now, there's a supermarket here that now is carrying a particular brand of chicken that does come in under 3 pounds. But the other day when I went in there, they were all over 3 pounds anyway. So 3.5 pounds is too much for the two of us. We each eat a thigh, leg, joint, and a wing. And then and by the way, I use my Joyce Chen scissors to cut all this off the chicken. You don't need to use a carving knife. But today, I have the leftover double breast there of chicken, and we're going to eat that as cold meat for lunch. And I'm going to make sauce grebiche, which I talked about a few weeks ago, because it's a real good fat addition. For instance, traditionally, sauce grebiche is used on cold food, like cold roast beef, cold steak. I'm going to make it today with cold chicken. Or how about fish? It's good on warm fish, too. fact, it's a good substitute for steak tartare. If you ever want to make a fish and chips with a fancy kind of sauce instead of just malt vinegar or plain tartare, which I do love. I'm not saying I don't. A grabiche. So grabiche is a kind of mayonnaise, really. And I enjoy making it by hand because, like mayonnaise, it's one of those things that transforms. You take egg yolks and you beat them and you add seasoning and oil very, 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 very slowly, and you end up with an emulsion that's called mayonnaise. And it's sort of miraculous, and it's fun to do, I think. You can do it in a blender, too. That's not as much fun. So I like to do it by hand. And you can do that. You can do regular old mayonnaise with a fork. I do find for grabiche, which instead of using raw egg yolks, uses hard-cooked egg yolks. I still make my eggs the same way. I don't care what anybody says. I bring them cold eggs in cold water to a boil, take it off the heat, cover the pot 12 minutes, and then peel the egg. So those yolks are perfect. And let them cool. Let everything, the eggs, cool. Take the yolks and push them through a strainer. Add your mustard acid, could be vinegar or lemon juice. I actually prefer lemon juice, but there are some acidic ingredients that are added to this, but so you could add vinegar also. So vinegar, I use as seasoning vinegar, or I'm sorry, lemon juice, mustard. I would say for a two-yolk grabiche, two hard-cooked yolks, push them through a strainer, add like 2 teaspoons of Dijon mustard, could be heaping teaspoons, at least a tablespoon of chopped capers. I use quite a bit of diced or sliced gherkins, depends on the size of your little gherkins, not sweet gherkins, the French gherkin, cornichon. They're called cornichons.
I love those.
And the thing that was missing the first time I made this several weeks ago was tarragon. But now I bought some tarragon to use on that chicken dish that I made last week. I was going to give you a report on it today. I still can. I did make it. That's the chicken with shallots. I needed tarragon for that. So I bought tarragon. And the fact is, I didn't use all of it. And I didn't make grabiche right away with the fresh tarragon. So I dried the tarragon. It seems to be terrific. It's very fragrant. How did I dry it? I just spread it out, the sprigs that were left after I made my chicken dish, I just spread them out on a piece of paper towel on the counter, and in 2 days they were all dry. So that's it. So grabiche is going to be served with the sliced breast. So out of this 3.5-pound chicken, we got 2 big meals. I must say, these are big. The chicken that I bought has very plump breasts. So 1 breast per person with grabiche, my added flavor and added fat for this keto diet, it'll be satisfying. We have some vegetables, too. I've been making various vegetable medleys and keep them in the refrigerator because I do have to have my vegetables, even though they do have carbs. And I made one the other day. I've been getting speaking of being a globivore, we get very good red peppers, even in the winter, from Mexico. They're as good as the local peppers I buy in the summer here. So I've been buying those peppers, and I made one the other day with 1 medium onion sautéed in some olive oil. And when it got a little, tender, a little bit, like maybe after 5 minutes, I added 2... I would call them medium-sized red peppers, seeded, deveined, and I cut the onion into large dice, and then I cut large, like half-inch dice, and I cut the peppers into maybe 3/4-inch dice, meaning, big, nice, squarish pieces. And I put that in the pot and let that sauté in the oil for a few minutes with a nice big pinch of salt. And then I added 2 medium zucchini, washed, of course, and I c- cut my zucchini lengthwise in quarters and then crosswise in half-inch pieces. So after the peppers cooked for a few minutes in the oil, I added the zucchini and let that cook a few minutes in the oil. And, of course, we got the salt and pepper in there. And then, finally, I added a half a can, a half a 20-ounce can, or if you have them, they're hard to find, a 14-ounce can of Italian plum tomatoes. I have really good San Marzanos in my pantry at all times, so I used a half of a 28-ounce can of San Marzano tomatoes. And I mashed them up. I basically took a fork to them in a little bowl before I put them in the pot. And then I added a little bit more salt and pepper. And I let that simmer about a half an hour. And boy, was that delicious. And including the next, when I reheated it with a lot of fresh basil. So it was a little different the second time. So we could eat it 2 days in a row and not feel like we were eating exactly the same thing. Bob can eat exactly the same thing every single day and would if I let him. But I can't. I need some variety. Anyway, I'm from Brooklyn. We're used to variety here. And I have to segue into, I miss Larry King already. Well, not that I've watched him in the last 10 years when he was doing prostate commercials, infomercials. But Larry King was a hero of mine, another Brooklyn boy, went to Lafayette High School. And what I loved when I became a radio interviewer, what I loved learning from Larry King, well, I did meet him once or twice, was that he never prepared for an interview, which is why he always sounded so fresh and wide-eyed, which is what we loved about him. He was so curious about everybody, and he didn't need to prepare much except to know, I mean, the people he was interviewing, you didn't have to do any research to find out who they were. I mean, George Clooney. So, and he always had people who could talk, which taught me a lesson, too, because back in the day when I started in radio, chefs were not what they are today. Chefs didn't want to be celebrities, and they didn't learn how to present themselves. Most of them did not know how to present themselves. And truthfully, I didn't think they had that much to offer to home cooks who were my listeners. Sometimes they did, and sometimes I had them on the program. But I used to say, isn't it enough that they can cook? You want them to talk, too? So I do both, but I don't cook for the public.
You know,
I only cook for us.
The whole thing about Larry King, and CNN has made a big thing. They've dedicated a lot of time. People forget CNN fired Larry King to bring on Piers Morgan.
I forgot that, too.
Yeah, they fired Larry King.
And I'm not, may I just say very politely, I'm not a Piers Morgan fan.
I don't know how you could be, and especially, you know, but they're making this big thing, how great, blah, blah, blah. They fired him for Piers Morgan.
They fired him because they thought he was too old, probably.
Yeah,
but look at that. He outlived them 15 years.
Yeah, it's just...
20 years.
But you're right. He, I learned a lot of my interviewing style. I learned from watching him and reading about him. Simply because I started out as a disc jockey. I introduced songs for probably the first two-thirds of my career.
Really?
Yeah, but then I used to watch him, and then you just said the most important thing. He didn't over-research people. I would research people, and I still to this day research a little bit about them, but then I asked them questions that let them unfold more about themselves and about what they're doing and about what they want to get across.
Yeah, and I always found it was very important to start off very kind and gentle and win them over and win over some trust. And then if you did have a hard question, you could ask it later. But anyway, I mean, I think the key here is you just got to be serious. I mean, I'm sorry, curious. If you're a curious person, you can be a good interviewer. And he was, like, one of the most curious. Anyway, he was, you know, he went to Lafayette High School. Did I say that? And I'm sure he liked variety in his diet, too.
Well, it's, and And it forced Larry King to do all those other stupid things that he did to keep income going. And he was also a good dad. And He had a great life.
So I want to, before it's my time is up, which is very soon.
You've got about 6 minutes.
I have 7 minutes. Yeah, 6 or 7 minutes. I did want to. I did promise you some feedback on this recipe for chicken with shallots that has been haunting me since 2014, and I just now made it. I know that it was 2014 because I ripped the page out of the New York Times Magazine. But it keeps coming up, so I finally made it. And you know, I followed the recipe exactly, even though I was very skeptical about 2 cups of white wine. I have to say, the recipe came out quite delicious. And in fact, I said, you know, I'm not sure I want to do this again as we were eating it. And I said, oh, please, you have to make this again. It's so delicious. So it is delicious, but I did not add the 2 tablespoons of flour to brown the chicken because, you know, I'm trying not to eat carbs. But I have to tell you, the 2 tablespoons of flour is totally insignificant carb-wise in a dish, even for 2 people. So 1 tablespoon of flour has like 6 grams of carbs. It's not a bad thing. So, and I wouldn't be surprised if you diminish that somehow by cooking it, browning it. Anyway, the only thing I didn't do was I didn't put in the flour, but I did use the 2 cups of white wine, and as I knew, the sauce was way too copious. I mean, the chicken came out great, but I had to change it at the end. I took the chicken out when it was cooked, which is to say after a half an hour, 8 minutes of browning and a half an hour of simmering with these flavorful wine and juices and seasonings. And but then I took the chicken out and I cooked down the sauce, which took some time. And this is a moment for me to talk about pan sizes. The problem with this recipe is it doesn't tell you what size pan. It just says large, heavy-bottomed pot or skillet. Too vague. I used my largest skillet because I wanted, well, first of all, they're calling for 8. The original recipe called for 8 chicken thighs. I only made 6. But even 6 were pretty snug in my largest, like, 14-inch skillet. If you made that in anything smaller, you would be stewing the chicken because it would be covered with liquid. You don't want these chicken thighs to be covered with liquid. So the fault of this recipe is it really should have said 12 to 14-inch skillet, so which is a large skillet. It is. So I had to cook it down for quite a while, and then I added the cherry tomatoes, a whole pint of cherry tomatoes cut in half, and I let that simmer for another minute, literally 1 minute, before I added the chicken back into the pan and let it warm through in the sauce, which was much, much reduced by now. Extremely flavorful. I think if I had used flour, of course, it would have thickened the sauce a little bit. I don't think that was necessary. I think, in fact, the sauce was better for having just been reduced. Anyway, the seasonings in this are, the main seasoning, I suppose, are the shallots. And I used 2 shallots per thigh, so I actually had 13 shallots and not 12 for my 6 thighs, and 2 nice tablespoons of Dijon mustard and quite a bit of tarragon. I used like a tablespoon of chopped fresh tarragon. And really, you can look this up. It's got to be on the New York Times website. But the fact is, on this are showing up everywhere. Mutations, one of our new words, right? There are mutations of this recipe. In fact, this recipe is a mutation of a recipe originated by Martha Stewart or somebody in her test kitchen. And I got it via Andrew Zimmern's wife. So, anyway, I'm going to make it again, not this week. We have other chicken to eat.
Well, I'm glad
we eat a lot of chicken here.
I make a thing now because I can digest it better. Pulled chicken. And so it's like pulled pork, but the chicken, it's easier for me to digest it in that matter.
Uh-huh. And do you sauce it with anything?
Yeah, I'll chili powder. Sauce? I'll take some. No, I always make it a little Mexican spicy. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's nice.
And it's nice and
I know what I wanted to talk about today, but I'll have to wait till next week. But this is, I have a couple minutes.
Yeah.
I go to the supermarket the other day to buy chili powder. They did not, believe it or not, have any kind of decent chili powder. I don't like these chili powders that have cumin, oregano, all this other stuff in them.
No, I use the chili powder that you recommended from that company that sells all those great beans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But here's but what I did see, they have a new line of rubs from a company called Brooklyn Rubs. My supermarket does try to stock local products when they're good and being distributed well. So I guess this is being well distributed. So you might find it in your store, too. Brooklyn is spelled the old Dutch way, or some one of the variations on the Dutch way, B-R-E-U. I think in this case it's B-R-E-U-K-L-E-N or L-I-N. Brooklyn Rubs. You'll find it. But what engaged me wasn't even the name Brooklyn Rubs, was the various names for the different products. There was I laughed about how my own hometown has changed since I grew up from these rubs. For instance, the Flatbush rub was jerk flavoring. Now, I would never associate Flatbush with Jamaican jerk chicken or jerk anything. However, yeah, it is. It's a Caribbean neighborhood these days. If you were going to have a rub in my day that was called Flatbush rub, it would have been pastrami rub. That wouldn't have been jerk rub. Then there was Abuela's rub. That, by the way, this is a black-owned company, but that's their nod to the Latino community. Abuela's rub. Abuela means grandma. Then there was I bought the East New York rub because it seemed like the mildest, and you know, Mr. Harnett doesn't like really, really spicy food. However, the East New York rub is, in fact, a mixture of various kinds of pepper, including Sichuan peppercorn, by the way. So you do get that ever so slightly numbness, but ever so slightly. So the thing that it doesn't have, any of them have, is salt, which I thought was curious. But then when I went online to look, you can go online and you can order them online. And I'm forgetting what the other neighborhood rub was. But anyway, they have no salt. And if you go online, people are loving the idea that these are rubs without salt. So you can control the amount of salt you put on your food. I made spare ribs with it. I did. I salted them well because I like salt, and I think pork needs salt. I salt them well on both sides. I rubbed them well with a few tablespoons. I had two 2-pound racks. I think I used maybe 3 tablespoons of this stuff for the 2 2-pound racks. And I roast my ribs covered in a roasting pan or it could be a sheet pan covered with foil at 275. By the way, pepper too. I didn't put a pepper on this because the rub was mostly it's almost altogether pepper. There's some fennel in there, too, fennel seed in there, too. Anyway, I cover it with foil, and I roast the racks, either on a rack or not on a rack. Doesn't matter, really. At 275 for 2.5 hours for mine to get tender. At that point, I brush them with barbecue sauce and increase the heat to 450 and roasted them with barbecue sauce for about 10 minutes on one side and then 10 minutes on the other side, and that was enough.
Yeah. Sounds great.
They were great.
All right.
I will make that again, too, with my East New York rub. So East New York, when I was a kid, was not full of peppers. Except Calabrese peppers, because we had a lot of Italians in East New York, and they all had these nice vegetable gardens on Fountain Avenue, which later, like 20 years later, became the most dangerous street in the city of New York. But in my childhood, it was nice old Italian guys tending to their fig trees in vegetable gardens.
All right, Arthur.
All right. Next week, maybe I'll be more focused.
Okay. Have a good week, Arthur.
You too.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.